When it comes to vipassana, insight, developing wisdom, panya, we actually don't have to do anything so special. We simply have to look at reality, seeing things as they truly are. Particularly the reality of sankhara, of conditioned phenomena, of everything that is dependent on conditions, which is everything we have ever experienced, unless a person is already a noble one, a stream enterer or above, and they have seen what is unconditioned, namely Nibbana. Otherwise, that is our whole experience, so we simply have to look at the reality of our whole experience, whether it is internally our feelings, emotions, thoughts, perceptions, intentions, our awareness, being conscious of forms, sights, sounds, and so on, or whether it's externally, other people, external phenomena, whether it is material, like the physical body, or external objects, and made of the four great elements, or whether it is a mental phenomena. And if we look at them as they truly are, just watching them, observing them without distorting, one can notice that they're very impermanent. That appears not so important or somewhat trivial, but it's amazing that we can kind of continuously overlook that, and it's amazing that we can live our life as if impermanence is not really there, although it is constantly being rubbed into our face. Now we constantly get it shoved into our face, but we somehow manage to ignore it, to deny it, to disregard it, to not adjust our life onto it. One simile I like to give is, you're trying to buy a house, get a really nice house, a home, and just imagine you find this perfect place, the up-and-coming suburb, excellent infrastructure, everything you want close by, very quiet, very peaceful, nice neighbors. And just when you want to buy it, you learn that they're building a motorway there, and that this house and that property will be expropriated and simply covered with a motorway in a year's time. Would you want to buy that house and start making yourself comfortable in there and buying all your furniture and painting it and bring it into top shape? Not really, why not? What's the point? In 1 year it will all be flattened, the bulldozers come, and then there will be just a motorway. Curiously, we don't look at the body quite the same. And that is the situation, maybe more than 1 year, but the basic situation is that this body will get into the coffin, and then into the earth to be eaten by worms, to slowly decay, or into the incinerator and to be burned to ashes. And that's the same for every other body we ever encounter, whether human or animal. But somehow we manage to maintain that illusion that things will continue. We live our life as if it has open-ended, as if it doesn't end with that. People like to make a lot of provisions for their retirement, and they're in their 30s and working, they usually give it quite some thought, no, about superannuation and managing your finances for retirement. Someone is smiling. Are you looking after your super and how it will all work out? Now, if one is in one's 30s and the retirement is some 30 years into the future, and then the average lifespan in Australia is something like slightly over 80, women a bit more, men a bit less, but I think both over 80 in Australia. So if you're in your 30s, now that would be 50 years or less. And people don't make any provisions really for the time after death. And it's quite curious. No? So they look 30 years ahead, and then there's a period of retirement which may be in the average something like 15 years. And they're so concerned about that. But for this thing 15 years later in the average, when finally death comes, and then the whole rest of eternity stretching beyond death, and that is kind of put into a parenthesis, and we kind of not to even think about it, to just leave that out of our calculation, don't even go there mentally. It's funny, isn't it? So all we have to do is to look at reality, and you find that things arise, may persist for a while, usually not very long, and then fall away, pass away, and cease. That's very obvious, with thoughts coming very quickly, rising, ceasing. Emotions may last a bit longer. The feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, excited, elated, melancholic, depressed, sad, afraid, coming, going, arising, passing, a very important one point I notice when one talks about that, often people don't really like that, they don't want to look there because it can be very challenging. And I've noticed sometimes even traditional Buddhists who have grown up with this teaching, everything is impermanent, they kind of have learned to accept that in a sense of resignation, okay, it's all impermanent and we can't change that, so we have to resign ourselves to that. This is not the point of the Buddha's teaching. He's not teaching us impermanence so that we resign ourselves to that. Why is the Buddha teaching impermanence? What's the point of this whole contemplation? That you just get a little bit depressed and say, okay, I can't really enjoy anything. My body will one day die, everyone I love will be separated from me one day, my possessions, I will be separated from them, so I kind of a bit sad, depressed, resigned into that. Is that the idea? Or what is the idea of that contemplation? What's the purpose? The Buddha usually has a very clearly established purpose for everything we're doing there. So why do you contemplate impermanence? To get a little bit down and okay, I can't really enjoy anything really because it's all impermanent. What's the point? Yes, and the letting go. Not resigning, but letting go. And the result of letting go is that we can experience what is beyond impermanence, namely Nibbana, namely the deathless, namely the state of freedom, liberation. If it was impossible to get out of impermanence, it may be better to ignore it and to try to live as happily as you can until it hits you. But it is actually possible to experience what is not impermanent. It's actually possible to go beyond death, to go beyond suffering, to go beyond separation from loved ones. And this is what the Buddha is aiming for with that contemplation. that ultimately our mind can see impermanence so clearly that it just automatically, based on that insight, automatically cuts away, drops, and abandons that attachment, that identification with impermanent phenomena. And when that happens, then the experience of Nibbana will occur. And this is what it's about. It's not about becoming a little bit depressed or resigned or can't change, and what can I do? No, not at all. Of course, no one has to get through this needle ear. It may at times be a bit challenging. You are contemplating impermanence, but the mind can not yet let go, even though you try. And at that stage, that contemplation obviously can be challenging and difficult and even fear-inducing. But then we can switch on the faith faculty, sat-hindriya. We can remind ourselves, even though we can't let go yet of these impermanent phenomena, and it appears quite challenging to contemplate this body falling apart, decaying, contemplate every emotion, every loved one as being separated from us. We remember with faith, with confidence, the teaching of the Buddha, that ultimately we can go beyond it. One day in the mind, if we practice consistently, one day in the mind will be able to let go and drop that all and experience what is free from suffering. Now that is the whole point. Samadhi will help. This is why Samatha and Vipassana work together. If the mind is imbued with Samadhi and the hindrances are suspended, suppressed, it's actually not mentioned as one of the hindrances, but it's a defilement which, just like the hindrances, is suspended, suppressed, that is fear. Fear is not really formally included in the five hindrances, but is another thing which Samadhi will suppress. And then one can contemplate more fearlessly. It's actually funny, Samadhi is the most stable thing in the whole universe. And the most stable thing in the whole universe is a good foundation to contemplate that everything is impermanent, to let go. It may first appear counterintuitive, but actually not really. Because if you're completely floating around, it's totally chaotic, it's actually very difficult to contemplate impermanence. And that very stable basis, the rebirth in the Arupa Jhana realms can go to 60,000 great eons. This is an unbelievable stability. Nothing else in samsara can ever last that long. It's lasting many, many times longer than the whole universe. So something incredibly stable, but it's still impermanent someday. That even that is gone and impermanent. It's fascinating that something very stable, which gives the mind the stability and an experience of almost timeless stability, is then exactly the vantage point from where you can see impermanence. It's a little bit like the fish in water. The old simile, that it's difficult for the fish to have much of an idea what water is. You would think that the fish should be an expert about water, but if you ask a fish about water and if he could speak, it would probably be quite difficult because he has never experienced anything else than being completely immersed and surrounded in water. So it's very hard to get your mind around that, understand that. So similar, if the mind has never experienced samadhi or anything even close to that, any kind of more calm state, more profoundly calm state, It's actually not so easy to contemplate impermanence. It's just too chaotic. It is all impermanent, but it's not very working very well for contemplation. But once the mind can experience something which is unusually stable, it is an excellent vantage point for now looking out and looking at all these impermanent phenomena. So sometimes the Dhamma is kind of made a little bit unnecessarily complicated. Now for sure the Buddha has expounded the Dhamma very extensively, but he sometimes would also summarize it very easily and concise. It's basically all we have to do, look at reality. And even just one of the most outstanding characteristics of reality, impermanence, we can clearly see that there will be enough, that the mind can let go and drop it all. And that is the condition for the experience of what is not impermanence. And once the mind experiences that, then it will be freed and released, or at least not the first stage where you're already secure, and the full release will definitely be experienced at the maximum of 7 lifetimes. So a very straightforward thing, looking at reality and seeing it's all impermanent, all conditioned phenomena at least, and that is usually all the only reality we know. And then contemplating that with sufficient consistency and depth, that the mind is just too much wearied and repulsed by it all, and gets so much nibbida that it finally lets go and experiences viraga and vimutti, dispassion, fading away and release. And that's all there is to it. Is it challenging in your meditation? Did you ever contemplate impermanence till you got really frightened out of your wits? If not, if you never got a bit frightened, then maybe you haven't really gone into it yet, because it can be a bit shocking. Can be a bit shocking, but one can has to get through that. And one has to build up a basis in samatha, that the mind can fearlessly and unbiasedly do it. A really crucial point is that it's not meant to lead to a state of resignation. Okay, it's all impermanent, I can't change it, so I just resign myself to it. It's meant to get you out of it. It's possible to get out of impermanence. It's possible to experience what is not impermanent. It's not something that makes us sad or resigned or depressive. It's incredible uplifting. And even if the mind can't let go fully to the extent of experiencing stages of enlightenment, sometimes in your meditation you may already get this joy and rapture not based on samadhi, but actually based on insight. Now when you notice that it's just so impermanent and the mind starts letting go, even just starting letting go, even just letting go partially, can give a huge uplift and states of joy and delight. Even contemplating the decay of your own body can give you that. It may sound counterintuitive, contemplating a decaying corpse, in particular your own body as a decaying corpse and gradually turning to earth. But when letting go occurs and you no longer see this as my body, and as long as there's this strong, I contemplate how my body is decaying, that can be quite frightening. And when that identification is already weakened, when that attachment is weaker, then you can get quite a bit of joy from that. What's your favorite contemplations to see impermanent? Do you have some favorite? Where the impermanence is easy for you to see, easy to contemplate. What's your favorite, Bobby? Sensations, impermanence of sensations, huh? Going on. Okay, everything. Good, good. That can't be wrong. So no particular preference. Anyone has some good sharing how you see impermanence easily? Because if it's easy for you, then it may also be easy to see for others. That was my idea of asking. Pain of the body, you find easy to see the impermanence. Great, yeah. Yeah, great, if you easily see that, fantastic. I think one advantage in pain meditation is, which makes it easy in that sense, is that it's very, very clear. If you have a strong physical pain, it's not like anapanasati, and you have got the very subtle breath, and people say, oh, maybe I stop breathing, I can't notice anymore that I'm breathing, that's so subtle that they can't even notice it anymore. But if you have some excruciating pain, you surely will be able to notice it, yes. It's also much more difficult to end up dozing and daydreaming. Very easy with anapanasati, to doze and daydream. If you have some really good pain, you will not easily doze and daydream. They will always bring you back to that meditation object. This is why some of the great Ajahns had very, very good results with that. Rumpo Tongdeng, who I will be visiting in only 8 days. Gosh, it's already so close. Looking forward being at Lumpa Tongdeng in Wat Doi, only 8 days till I'm there. Although he's in so much metta, but he has actually in his own practice, he has done a lot of pain meditation, also body contemplation. It's no contradiction as someone who has worked with Dukkha Vedana meditation, with Asubha, body contemplation and so on, they can still have an amazing metta when you interact with them.